again with rats. Rats, or more specifically, Asian rats. I'm blaming this one on you guys. Asian rats, and what do rats have? Fleas. And what did these particular fleas have? These fleas had disease. A unique and explosive disease, the likes of which the world had never seen before or since. In the 1300s, rats began carrying diseased fleas all over the place. They started in Asia. In 1334, in what is now modern-day Beijing, 5 million people died. Approximately 90% of the population. Almost overnight. But the rats didn't stay in Asia for long. The rats, like a plague from God, traveled fast across the earth towards Europe. Stowing away on riverboats and with merchants and Mongol warriors, rats traveled from Asia to the West, towards Europe, towards Arabia, towards the Christian world, with the words on them, "Made in China." By 1347, the rats and their fleas had reached Europe. And once you were bitten by a flea, within days, you'd get tumors the size of apples in your groin and your armpit. So you have to walk around like this. And then black spots would start to appear all over your body. So you look like a Dalmatian walking around like this. And 1 week, everything was normal. You know, people went to church, and pubs were running, and jobs were going on. The next week, the streets were riddled with bodies, the smell of decaying flesh in the air, death clinging to the inside of your nostrils. Everywhere, dead bodies being carried away to mass graves because there were too many people dying to give them all a proper burial. Everywhere you went, mothers screaming, priests praying, rats scurrying, fleas biting, heads itching, bodies decaying, death cheering in its victory. Death celebrating its great accomplishment. Death so pleased with himself for creating a moment in history so dark, so terrible, so horrid, that subsequent generations could only call it the Black Death. You might have heard it called the plague, or the Black Plague, or bubonic plague. It's pretty much the same thing. The Black Death was a 4-year period in history from 1347 to 1351 where over half of Europe died. Literally half. Turn to the person next to you and look at each other. One of you would have died. It was either you or them. Hopefully it's that. And what do you think that did to European society? What does half your population dying do to a culture? Well, something interesting happens in art after the Black Death. They continue painting portraits and scenes of everyday life like they've always done, but something new begins to creep in. Now their pictures of everyday life have skeletons in them. Death begins to be painted right next to life. Death isn't far off. No, death is close. Here, skeletons are literally dancing with the living. As priests and kings and ladies and lords and common folk go about their day, they are surrounded on either side by death. Death is not something far off happening to other people in the distant future. No, death is dancing in and around us all. Death is close, hovering beside us, ready to take our hand at any second and lead us in its dance. Fittingly, this movement in art was called the Dance of Death. Or Dance Macabre, which I can't quite say. So I'm just going to say the Dance of Death. Black Death caused their culture to picture death as close, as something that dances in and among us. When half your population dies almost overnight, you can't pretend that death isn't close, can you? You can't run from death when everywhere you go, corpses are piling up. You can't live as if death isn't real when everywhere you look, death is more real than life itself. What the Black Death did was force medieval culture to confront the reality of death. Death became their teacher. Art and culture and religion and philosophy grew out of the Black Plague and was enriched by wrestling with death. Death was so real they couldn't deny it. But in our modern 21st century world, death doesn't always seem that real, does it? In Canada, the US, or Hong Kong, we don't really have an equivalent of the Black Plague to cause us to reflect on death. I mean, sure, people still die in wars, but those are usually fought somewhere else by other people, like in the Middle East. It's not personal or real for us in the way death was real on your street, outside your front door during the Black Plague. Death isn't really built to our modern culture the way it was back then. I mean, using science and modern medicine, we've managed to push death out of our world. Back in the 1300s, an 18-year-old was basically middle-aged. You guys are right about to hit your midlife crisis. In the past, you grew up and then almost immediately began preparing for your death. But now, today, many of us can go up to 50 or 60 years old before death is even on our radar. Today, the vast majority of us die in a hospital, tucked away from daily life. But in the past, you died at home. Your own family would take care of your body. The room in the house where you died would become a reminder evermore that death was a part of life, built into the very architecture of your home. In the Middle Ages, infant mortality was so bad that if you had six kids, maybe only two or three of them would survive. I keep pointing to you guys, and I'm not trying to traumatize you with death. Only two or three of six might survive. The average child grew up with numerous siblings who had died, and so death was ingrained in your worldview from the very start. But today, the infant mortality rate is almost non-existent. Most of us don't have to deal with death until we're older, and our worldview is already solidified. So when someone we love eventually dies, it's not just sad, it's mind-blowing because literally our minds had never comprehended it before. It's something totally, mind-bogglingly new. We are an anomaly in history. We are perhaps the first people ever to have the technology and medicine needed to keep death out of our daily life. One psychologist even diagnosed, our society is being, quote, in the denial of death. He published a book about it called The Denial of Death. And it won the Pulitzer Prize. But he couldn't collect it because he died 2 months earlier. It's beautiful irony. And in the book, he says that our modern society represses death. We intellectually know that we're going to die. We get that on a conceptual level, but we don't really accept it in our hearts. It hasn't really sunk in. Sure, we occasionally worry about death, but then we change the subject. Death isn't really dinner conversation, so we move on to something brighter and less gloomy. We deny death. I was telling someone that I was going to preach on here today, and he's like, oh, don't do that. Don't talk about death. Today, modern teens and young adults live as if the party will never end, oblivious to the possibility of death or aging. And then we grow up, and we pour ourselves into our families and careers and wealth. But then comes the midlife crisis, when we realize that riches and respect won't matter when we're dead, so we turn our attention to delaying death. The aging take drugs and get injections and rub on creams and use dyes and try diets and do anything to stay younger for a little longer. And finally, on our deathbed, death finally catches up to us. Death is so close that even us modern people can't deny it any longer. And in those last moments, death clarifies things for us. On our deathbed, we look back and wish we'd lived differently. Wish we'd had different priorities. Wish we'd spent more time with our family. Perhaps wish we were more religious and more prepared for the end. Wish we'd faced death sooner and allowed it to put things into perspective when we were still alive and still had time to do something about it. But by then it's too late. Perhaps if we'd been willing to look death in the face earlier, we may have lived better lives when we still could. See, during the Black Plague, they might have died a few years younger than we did, but both us and them end up in the same place. We all end up rotting in the ground. Perhaps the only real difference between us and them is that they knew they were going to die and allowed that to shape their worldview and art and how they lived. But we deny it for as long as we can. And so death teaches us nothing. You are going to die. You're dying right now. I mean, every minute you get 60 seconds close. Tick, tock, tick, tock. Death isn't just something that happens to other people. It's not something that happens to just your grandparents or your cousin's mother's uncle. You are going to die. And every year, you pass the anniversary of your death. You don't know it, but you do. Will you die July 12th, 2063? Will I cease to be October 23rd, 2017? every single year you pass the anniversary of your death, the day is coming. And one morning your alarm will go off and you won't hit the snooze button. The alarm will wail on and on until someone hears it and discovers your body, or the battery runs out of life. Friends and family will gather to celebrate your life and then go out for dim sum, and you won't be there to eat it. And then you will be lowered into the ground, where you'll slowly decompose in a dark, claustrophobic box, your once beautiful skin eaten away by whatever festers below the ground until you're nothing but a skeleton. See, death might have gone all in and played his hand in the Black Plague, but he's playing the long game with all of us as well, letting us slowly bleed chips until we've got nothing left. Granted, it's not as dramatic as a plague, but the effect is ultimately the same. We all end up in the ground. And we tell ourselves we'll be remembered by loved ones. I'll live on in your hearts. I'll be right here. Has anyone ever said that? But it's not true. I spent a few hours in a graveyard walking around preparing for this sermon. And I walked through and I saw all the different graves. There were some graves from like the 1880s and the 1890s, all the way back then. And the newer graves, the ones from like the 1980s, 1990s, you could still make out everything that was said on them. You know, they were still clean. Someone came along and wiped the moss off, and you'd occasionally see flowers there, right? Because family were coming to remember them. But past 1980, 1970, 1960, no one came to take care of the graves. There were no flowers left there. Moss had grown up around the words and the tombstone, and no one had come to scrape it off. You'll live on for a time in the hearts of your loved ones. But soon your loved ones will eventually die, and within a few years, no one will be left on this earth who visits your grave. No one will remember your name. No one will know that you ever even existed. You will be forgotten. And not only will you die, but if you live long enough, you will witness and have to watch everyone else you love die. Or will die.
There will come
a time when he will never call you again, never surprise you again, never be proud of you again. Your mother will die, and eventually you'll get over it, but occasionally you'll walk past someone who had the same perfume as her, and you'll just break down right there. Your sister or your brother will die, and no one will be left to reminisce with you about your childhood, because no one has been there since the beginning other than them. Your friends will die. The people who knew you best on this planet will no longer be on the planet. Your love, your companion, your other half will die, and it will feel like you've died with them. And you'll hope that perhaps one day I will see my loved one again in heaven. But some part of you won't fully believe it. Some part of you will be haunted by the thought that they really don't exist anymore and will never hold you again. I've been haunted by that thought. Haunted by the terror of death. I remember I was sitting on a train heading to Seattle. And I was looking out the window as the world zoomed past. The train sped through everything. Houses going by, trees on either side up the window. And suddenly I began to imagine the clouds outside moving more rapidly, fast forwarding into the future, the sun rising and falling at warp speed, seasons coming and going outside, years passing, and the train tracks overgrown and forgotten with time. I imagined the houses next to the train tracks torn down and rebuilt and replaced, the children playing in those backyards, growing up, working hard, retiring, going to a nursing home, then eventually buried in the very dirt they once played in. I saw all the buildings and people and relationships and achievements we humans derive meaning from, and I saw it all disappearing over time until no trace of us was left. Then I snapped back to reality, returned to the present, and looked around me on the train. There were people reading, texting, laughing, fiddling with their phones. A man was coming around to collect the tickets like business as usual. A few rows up, a mother was rocking her child to sleep. And it must have jarred something in me as well, because suddenly I had a flashback of my own mother when I was a small child. I was on my back in the bathtub, looking up at her. I was like 2 or 3 or 4. I don't know how old I was. And I have this memory that she was pouring shampoo on my scalp and slowly rubbing it in. And she was looking down right into my eyes, smiling. And water up to my ears. I look up and I smile back at her, feeling such safety and peace. And then as I sat there on the train, recollecting that memory, remembering looking up into her eyes, suddenly the memory changed. It warped. Suddenly, her eyes disappear and are replaced by empty sockets. The cheekbones of her smile turn into a skull staring back at me, the invisible skeleton that would one day be all that's left of my mother. Wasn't just content with stealing my future, now it was haunting my past and stealing my memories and robbing all the meaning out of it. And the train came to a slow stop, pulling into the station. My mind was racing, my heart thump, 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 overwhelmed by the thought of death. It was probably the closest I've ever got to a panic attack, and I hurried out the train doors onto the platform, desperate for some fresh air, and looked around at all the people getting on and off the train, women rushing to work, men greeting their waiting families, children holding on to their parents in the crowd. All of them, to me, suddenly looked like skeletons dancing around, oblivious to the oblivion that awaits us all. Then the train did that screeching whistle sound, announcing it was departing. And something inside me screamed with it. I got back onto the train and I dug through my bag hurriedly, trying to find my Bible. And I pulled it out and I flipped to 1 Corinthians 15. And I sat there on the train, heaving back and forth, repeating to myself over and over again, Christ has been raised from the dead. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? And my soul finally found relief on that train. Christ defeated death. He died, rose again on the third day, showing once and for all that death is not the end. Though I may die, I will one day rise again. Death has been defeated, swallowed up in the resurrection. Jesus says in John 11, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live even after they die. Death is not the end of the chapter. Is just the end of a chapter, but not the end of the story. Now, death is still painful and sad. We should still mourn it and weep and grow through the grieving process. Jesus at the grave of Lazarus wept. He broke down. He didn't hold it in and say, there, stiff upper lip. He wouldn't want you to cry. No, he just broke down and let it out. Jesus wept. We should mourn, but we should not mourn without hope. In the midst of our sadness, we still have hope that one day we may see our loved ones again. One day they may rise again and we may rise with them. One day every tear will be wiped away. One day what's been lost will be found. One day things will be okay again. One day our eyes will close, our heart will stop, and our breath cease. And when we wake up, we will be with them again. And with God. Where, O death, is your victory? Where? Sting. We should not deny death. We should think about death and contemplate it and learn from it and realize how scary it is. But do not let thought of death overcome you with anxiety. Instead, let it point you to the God who overcame death with life. The point is not to wallow in our fear. No, death is meant to point us back to the one who has defeated death. Thinking about death is not an end in itself. It is a means to an end. Death leads you to think about deeper questions, to ask about God, eternity, and the afterlife. As Schopenhauer said, death is the muse of philosophy. Death has caused almost every civilization throughout history to contemplate their existence, to think deeply about religion and philosophy, to let death inspire art and poetry and spirituality. But if society denies death, then it loses its primary drive to think about deeper questions. Perhaps the real reason religion is declining in modern first world countries like ours, is because of our denial of death. Perhaps it's not that science and modern medicine replaced religion, but instead that science and modern medicine prolonged life and helped us deny death. So we no longer ask the questions that God once answered. Since we don't really see death much anymore, we don't see the need for an afterlife much anymore. Because we're not surrounded by death the way people during the Black Plague were, we don't let death teach us or point us to something higher. And whenever death does come up, we shrug it off or change the subject. Or I even saw some of you laughing because the modern self cannot just face death straight on. It has to laugh about it. It has to get out the anxiety and the emotion somehow. And if it doesn't know how to actually process it in healthy ways, it just laughs at it or dismisses it or runs from it. Because we don't acknowledge the dance of death, we no longer desire the dance of resurrection. But death is coming. And death doesn't care if you acknowledge him or not. Death doesn't need your approval. One day, perhaps not too long from now, death will walk up to you, extend its hand, and say, "May I have the last dance?" And then before you can even give an answer, death will sweep you off your feet and twirl you around like a rag doll. He'll pull you in close on the dance floor and whisper into your ear, "You are mine." And you can whisper right back, "I belong to no one except God. The song is almost over. Christ is coming back for me. Your dance is nearly done." And then death will pull you in even closer and taunt you with a smile. And you can taunt that tool right back. You can whisper in his ear, "Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting?" Father,